Osiris.
Coming at you May 3rd, 2024. It's the inaugural record release from Discograffiti. Metal Machine Muzak is a slanted tribute to Lou Reed's divisive 1975 double LP Metal Machine Music. Lester Bangs called it the greatest album ever made, but no matter how it hits you, it's always been the ultimate music freak secret handshake. My ambient reimagining features four 16-minute, one-second tracks, just like the original, and each one was created by a top-shelf indie rock visionary. Lou Barlow from Dinosaur Jr. and Sebado, Corey Hansen from Wand, W. Cullen Hart from the Olivia Tremor Control, and Mark Robinson from Unrest. That's right, not a slouch in the bunch, unlike 99% of the compilations you've ever begrudgingly purchased for the one and only band on it you just had to hear. Metal Machine Muzak won't be available on streaming. The digital drops on May 3rd. The vinyl will be shipped this summer, and we're taking pre-orders for both right now. The LPs are going fast. They're being produced in a very limited edition run of 300 numbered 180-gram color vinyl double LP gatefold copies, only 100 of which can be ordered online. These copies will be numbered from 1 to 100, and they're first come, first served. To order, just go to patreon.com/discograffiti, then head into our shop. Again, that's patreon.com/discograffiti. Don't miss out on Metal Machine Muzak, the ambient experience designed to make Brian Eno run screaming. Welcome to Discograffiti, the music obsessives podcast that gives freaks like you and me the chance to connect with a brotherhood obsessed with rating the entire discography of every single artist and band that ever mattered. I'm your host, Dave Gebro, and with 3 to 4 episodes each week, you're going to gain a comprehensive knowledge of an act's history and output in the time it takes to listen to one album. Each new guest swings a hard left into an area you either had no idea you needed to know about or know all about and can't believe you're not alone out there. I am thrilled to announce that we have partnered with the podcast network Osiris Media, the leading storyteller in music. You can check out all their music podcasts at osirispod.com. It's Metal Machine Music Week here on Discograffiti. Ergo, in this bite-sized mini-episode, we'll be turning our spray cans on Lou Reed's deafeningly assaultive 1975 double album. Psst. Along with our special guest, Corey Hansen from Wand, one of the exalted contributors to Discograffiti's Metal Machine Muzak double tribute LP. Make sure you don't miss out on the other 3 bite-sized Metal Machine Music pieces this week. The full roster is as follows: Lou Barlow on Friday, April 26th, Corey Hansen from Wand on Monday, April 29th, Unrest's Mark Robinson on Wednesday, May 1st, and the Olivia Tremor Control's W. Cullen Hart on Thursday, May 2nd. And then next week, we'll be celebrating the May 3rd release of Metal Machine Muzak with 4 separate episodes in which Robinson, Hart, Hansen, and Barlow detail the approaches they took to each of their 16-minute pieces. To order Metal Machine Muzak, just head over to patreon.com/discograffiti/shop, or just click either of the links right there in the show notes. But whatever you do, make sure you order it, because it'll blow your effing mind, and it's for a good cause, because it'll help keep this show afloat. Just try to imagine a world without Discograffiti. Yeah, I know, it stinks. And while you're up there ordering on Discograffiti's Patreon, feel free to subscribe as well for the complete versions of all our shows, plus a massive barrage of over 150 extra episodes. Even if you're on the fence, you might as well, because it's completely free to become a basic member. And away we go then with Corey Hansen. All right, we are here with the modern day king of the twin guitar assault with the pop chops to back it the fuck up, Corey Hansen. How you doing?
Holy shit. I forgot about how fucking wild your introductions are. I'm doing good.
Every time I have a guest on, I wind up talking about you, and then I send you a clip of the conversation that we have. I'm unofficially your PR person. All right, let's talk about your connection with Lou Reed first. You know, because of the four guys working on this, there's varying stages of actual connection with Lou Reed, and especially Lou Reed solo. But I know that there is an import as far as what he brings to the table for you and the music you make, right?
Well, I got in a fight with him once. Yeah, I mean, Lou's had a tremendous influence. I mean, he's in my top five, he's like number one or two. Changes, you know, who's my favorite songwriter. The only thing that seems consistent is that they're all Jewish. You know, Lou, Dylan, Leonard, and Berman, you know, those are all like the four heavy hitters. And then the thing that I like about Lou is that he has a great sense of humor about his own work, especially in his later records. The ones that he made before he died, the kind of world that he's making in these records starts to like incorporate a lot of different things that are like pretty provocative, but in all these different ways. And they get like a lot more epic. Like I'm talking about The Raven specifically, where all of a sudden it's like he's trying to make music for everybody. There's like something for everybody on that record, but he's self-aware in a way. He's like making a record about Edgar Allan Poe. Everyone knows who Edgar Allan Poe is. And he's sort of like creating this parallel between him and Edgar Allan Poe, which is a really funny idea to be like, yeah, I'm this like dark modern day Edgar Allan Poe. But he's never actually Poe, but he's writing about Poe. He's like got a self-awareness that I feel like someone like Bob Dylan doesn't really do in the same way. His sense of humor is like different. I feel like for Bob, it's more like I'm pushing the audience, and I'm, you know, in some ways it feels like he's making fun of the audience. Sometimes, you don't know anything about me. You don't know who I am. You don't know anything, blah, blah, blah. All right, man. Like, whatever. Yeah, you're right. I don't fucking know you. But Lou Reed, it seems like he's more like, you know me. I'm fucking Lou.
But yet every time out, he's a different dude. He's singing about, you know, going to play football for the coach. Then he's doing 16 minutes and 1 second of ear piercing shit. Then it's about an egg cream. Then it's like a possum. Then it's Lulu. You never know.
Yeah.
But he is saying, yeah, you know me, but he's still twisting the dial just like Dylan.
I just think the way that he's doing it is more vulnerable than what Dylan does. Dylan, it seems like, is impenetrable. And Lou, you know, I think in his like character and stuff, gives the presentation of someone who's like a hard, impenetrable character. But he's like writing these incredibly vulnerable, emotional songs.
You're totally right. Bob Dylan is a brick wall. And Lou never presented himself that way. There was always a way in. It's just the way in always changed. It was a moving target, but there was always that way in. I remember when I brought up asking you if you knew what Metal Machine music was, and your voice noticeably kind of went up an octave. I mean, I could tell immediately that you had a connection with it. I know you own it, right?
Yeah.
What is your relationship with this record? It's hard not to have like an actual active relationship with it.
Well, I guess my relationship with Metal Machine music began when I was at CalArts in 2009. I was in the art school, but I took a lot of music school classes, and one of my instructors, this guy Ulrich Krieger, he is a dude who does like experimental jazz, avant sax shit. And he took Metal Machine music and transcribed it and was performing it as the Metal Machine music trio. And I think that was in the late 90s that he was doing that. And then Lou found out about it and then hired them, and they toured doing Metal Machine music. And then Ulrich ended up playing with Lou just like in his regular band for a few years. And so that was my first introduction, which is kind of like an interesting introduction, because thinking about that record academically is sort of like antithetical in some ways. But that was like my first I was in college and I was like working with a professor who transcribed Metal Machine music. He's Dutch, so he's kind of like really into figuring out how things work and recreating them. So we worked on like transcribing. I was in like a metal orchestra with him, and we like transcribed like death metal songs and like Deicide and Burzum and black metal. death metal and like some Sun, the band Sun. And then also doing like Philip Glass pieces and some more heady shit, like neoclassical stuff. And that was sort of like the class taking a neoclassical approach to heavy music. But Metal Machine Music kind of exists in a class of its own, like actually listening to it. I don't think I even listened to it back then, but like listening to it now, it's like, it's really kind of like hi-fi studio experiment. It's doing something that I just don't know any other like experimental, like kind of harsh record, you know, from that period. I mean, I can't think of anything else that does what it does. There's like the Brian Eno collaborations with Robert Fripp and the ambient records that he did. But those are all like really nice sounding and like have a space to them. But there's no real sense of space on Metal Machine Music. It is just these textures and sounds and tape manipulations and studio experiments that are just like moving around in this kind of like music concrete way, where it's like not trying to replicate any kind of environment or even change or like augment like an existing environment, like to soundtrack it. It is just like music. It just is a thing in itself. And so trying to make something to go along with that idea was challenging because I didn't want to replicate what Lou did, but I wanted to like use some of the same principles of like looping and tape manipulation and vary speed and feedback and find ways to integrate all these studio tools like into making something that was just like with the spirit of what Lou did.
The thing I'm super excited to ask you about, because knowing Ulrich, the crux of Lou's seeming fuck you at the time, his big fucking extended bird, was positing this thing as a highfalutin electronic composition, when in fact it may have been an amphetamine-fueled fuck you to his record company. So to wait decades and then to have serious neoclassical transcribers and composers and players come to him and, you know, to have the snake eating its own tail in a sense. Did he have any insight into whether Lou thought, well, I'm so surprised that you would take it seriously, or it's about time somebody took it that seriously?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was at a time when there was like a critical reevaluation of his body of work beyond Transformer and maybe Blue Mask, which I feel like are the two records that have some critical appreciation. Before that, it was like Perfect Day and then Velvet Underground. Velvet Underground was like cool enough. People care about that band. But Lou's stuff, yeah, I feel like he's always had trouble. I mean, he's made a lot of really great experimental records, and he's always been more forward thinking and like sonically. That's the cool thing that I like about him, or that I relate to him about, is that he's like thinking about a sonic space. He's thinking about fidelity constantly. And he's also thinking about his writing, you know, and what he's trying to express and how best to express that thing and get the best capture of it or whatever. Berlin and Metal Machine Music and Street Hassle and stuff were all sort of coming back at that time.
Yeah, I was going to say Street Hassle to me belongs in that same company with Blue Mask and Berlin. But just as there's two types of people, there's the people who prefer Diamond Dave and the people who prefer Sammy Hagar. There's people who find Sally Can't Dance to be a great record and Metal Machine Music is unlistenable. And then people like me who feel like Metal Machine Music is like the color white and includes all music in it, and Sally Can't Dance is unlistenable. So which is the less endurable experience? Is it Sally Can't Dance or Metal Machine Music?
Oh, man. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I've definitely listened more to Metal Machine Music than Sally Can't Dance. But I'm just interested in him in whatever capacity he's in, like in his records, you know. I'm interested in all of it for the most part. I love reading about in what horrible shape he was in, you know, doing Berlin, and in what great shape he was in doing Blue Mask.
And you've read the Lester Bang stuff, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. I mean, they're fucking legendary, those interviews and shit. They're so good. And he's just fucking so mean to him in those. He's just like, this guy's a fucking junkie. He's a piece of shit. He's gay. He's straight. No one knows what's going on. But I mean, Lou's brain, like, I feel like he had this rock and roll sound and this rock and roll spirit, and everything about him was fucking just rock and roll. But he just wanted to figure out a way to express the rock and roll that was inside of him in a meaningful way that would use modern technology to like push it as far as it could possibly go. And Metal Machine Music to me is like the peak, like the apex of that.
When you listen to it, and are you scared to go there? Because it provokes a hell of a lot of shit in me. I mean, I've listened to it a number of times and, you know, not always looking to dive into it because it will swallow you up. So how does it make you feel?
I think it's like pretty relaxing. I mean, I was talking to John Dwyer about it the other day, and he was like, yeah, put it on when I'm on an airplane. I want to go to sleep. You know, it's like there is a soothing quality to it. A lot of the high frequency stuff that is like perceived to be harshness, maybe I've just spent too much time being punished by like my own electric guitar sound. Yeah, I just hear like the ear candy, you know, like the all that high frequency shit is so great. There's very little low frequency information on that record. It's like all designed to be like piercing, brittle pieces of information. It's just a different frequency. Music, especially when it comes to genre, I like, a lot of people think like, okay, so techno is, you know, this drum beat, house music is this drum beat, and rock and roll is this drum beat, and then there's punk and stuff. But I think of like the drum beats, you know, always define that. But drum beats are frequency. That is like rhythmic frequency. And frequency also extends to, you know, jazz has a certain frequency to me. You know, it's sort of like warm and it's like 600 hertz or something. And rock and roll, you know, is like in the frequency of like the human voice or whatever. It's like 800 to like 4K. So certain kinds of music, it's like tuning into a radio station where you're like, okay, this is the rock radio station and all the music fits in that frequency space. Something like Metal Machine Music, it feels higher than that. It's like up above that. So it's kind of like looking down on all the other frequency stuff, being like, hey guys, this is what's up here, you know?
The most amazing thing that I've found in doing this, you know, Will Hart from the Olivia Tremor Control, he puts on Metal Machine Music for the same purpose, to relax, to go to sleep. So it almost feels like an ambient reimagining is like overstating the obvious. Like we're just kind of doing the same thing Lou did.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, when I think of soothing, relaxing music, it's like binaural beats now. Like there's a lot of kind of clinical ambient music that is specifically for like, put your brain in an alpha state, you know, put this on the 528 frequency, rejuvenate your DNA, healing DNA frequencies and stuff like that.
Yeah.
You know, like the new age stuff, which I fucking love all that shit because I just love anything that's like auditory that, you know, serves some kind of purpose other than like listening enjoyment, where it's like body healing or like, you know, repair ancient memories, you know, like from past lives or whatever. But again, this, you know, goes back to this idea of frequency, which is like 528 hertz. That's the healing your DNA frequency or whatever. Yeah, it isn't ambient music in the sense of, yeah, being calming. The purpose is not to calm for Metal Machine Music. It isn't to be like, look at how calming all of this aggressive, harsh electric guitar, you know, that's processed through all these tape manipulations can be. It really is, you know, just purely subjective. You can hate it and you're welcome to hate it, but you're also welcome to be like soothed by it or like be compelled by it. And I like that about it.
My favorite thing about you getting into a fight with Lou is somebody being contrarian to one of the ultimate contrarians. And yet he was open to being fought with, right?
He's no stranger to conflict.
Right.
And I was, yeah, a contrarian in training at that time. It's a skill that I work at every single day in my own way. But he's been one of my teachers for sure.
All right, that about does it. Stay tuned, because this Wednesday brings upon us Mark Robinson and his examination of his relationship with the awe-inspiring Metal Machine Music. A heartfelt discography thanks goes out to my beautiful son, Mason, the incomparable Corey Hansen, Michael Dutcher, Rudy Fishman, Becky Boyd, my incredibly loyal fans, and especially the entire Patreon community, the Soldiers of Sound. I love every last one of you, and this show would not exist without you, my friends. Speaking of friends, it's high time for some new ones. They're in our Facebook group, Discography Soldiers of Sound. That's the best way to find out what's coming up on the show, but there's a hell of a lot more. You get recaps of the day in music history, the ability to pitch questions to guests, polls that put you in the driver's seat on guest and band decisions, and access to a thriving creative hub if you're looking for a collaborator. So make sure you don't miss out. You can find the link to the Discography Soldiers of Sound Facebook page right there in the show notes. And if you don't mess with the Zuck, no sweat. Just email me at info@discography.com and I'll keep you in the loop. So now that it's done and you want more, another way to dive even deeper into the four visionaries featured on the upcoming Metal Machine Muzak tribute album is to leap headfirst into Lou Barlow Rates the Zombies. That's episodes 59 and 60. Unquestionably the greatest Lou Barlow interview of all time. That's episode 62. Juan's Corey Hansen rating his band's entire discography plus his solo work. That's episodes 120 and 121. And don't miss his Patreon companion episodes. W. Cullen Hart rating the Olivia Tremor Control and the Circulatory System. That's episodes 131, 132, and 133. With substantially elongated edits in our Patreon for the Lieutenant and Major tiers, and the epic 16-hour Mark Robinson interview, which is episodes 128, 130, 135, and 136, with massively elongated companion edits on our Lieutenant and Major tiers and our Patreon as well. And of course, be sure to mark your calendars, because we're coming at you raging full on with Metal Machine Music Week. Trust me, you're not going to want to miss a single second of it. And so, from now till then, don't let our youth go to waste, lads and ladies. It's Discography.
Osiris.